2004 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 241, Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, Heat or Light? A panel featuring Marv Hamilton, Leanna Ray Scott, Manny Garcia, and John Hatch.
Question of the crowd. The film we're going to discuss is a film that has divided a whole bunch of people, but also brought a lot of people together, interestingly enough. My name is Paul Swenson. I'm going to moderate this discussion. I would like to introduce the members of the panel. To my left is Leanna Ray Scott. So happens I'm married to Leanna Ray Scott, but her position on this film is what interested me. She's Canadian. She came here, immigrated to the United States 3 years ago when we got 3.5 years ago when we got married, and she's jumped into what the political argument about this film and about the coming election is about, and. She takes my breath away with how involved she is, and she's an example to me in that way. Leanna Ray Scott has a BA in psychology and women's studies from Athabasca University in Alberta, Canada. She is a writer. She is an editor. She is an airline ticket agent, which keeps her up late into the night. Luckily, she's got a couple of days off to come to Sunstone. She is also the mother of 13 children and the grandmother of 34. And I had no hand in this. I can only stand back and observe what has happened. To her left is Ron Fredrickson, who has stepped in to the breach within the last hour. The panelist Marv Hamilton, listed in your programs, is a singer-songwriter who is doing a performance in Torrey, Utah today and had to leave much earlier than he had expected, and he's on the road. Ron Fredrickson, who has taught theater in Kansas for 27 years, has his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Utah, where he is now adjunct instructor in theater. And for those of you with a theatrical interest, he is directing The Glass Menagerie on the Babcock stage beginning in November. So don't miss that. And if some of you were undoubtedly in a session earlier yesterday when Ron performed a new work written by David Pace that is going to make a mark in Mormon literature, let me tell you. On his left is Manny Garcia. Manny Garcia is the author of the book Accidental Soldier, which just won an award, the first place nonfiction award from the Utah Center for the Book this year. Manny is a Vietnam War veteran, and the book is about his experience in Vietnam. And on my far left, on the end of the table, is John Hatch, who also stepped into this program late to replace a panelist who couldn't make it, and well, I'll tell you that story very briefly. Three different Republican women agreed to be on this panel, and they all bowed out one at a time. And so, John, if you've got any Republican woman vibes in you, no, you don't have to do that. But John does bring a perspective to the film that is different to some degree than others here. So. What we're going to do, John is the Sunstone Symposium chairman for this year, is that correct, John? And is on the Sunstone staff. What we would like to do is, starting with Leanna Ray Scott, is tell a bit about your perspective, their perspectives on the film, and maybe mention a moment in the film that had a particular impact, either pro or con, galvanized you in some way, made you suddenly come to grips with the material that the film is discussing, and then fill that out with some of your perspectives on the film. Then perhaps, depending on how time goes, we'll come back and do some... I'll remove the microphone from here. We can pass it between us for some between panel discussion, and not far off, we want to involve you in the discussion, because this is a film that brings brings a lot of emotion and a lot of facts to bear, and a lot of material that has been both supported and questioned in the press. So we will start with Leanna Scott.
You don't have to. You want to stay there?
Well,
sure. We can do it this way.
So as you already know, I come to this film from a Canadian feminist perspective. Canadians, as you may know, much prefer to take a peacekeeping role in war rather than engage in active warfare. And they don't generally engage in warfare unless it is viewed as absolutely necessary. And their criteria to meet this absolutely necessary status are somewhat more stringent than they are in the U.S., I think. A preemptive strike would be pretty much not compatible with the average Canadian perspective, and I'm sure it isn't for a lot of people here too, but it's different. Canadians are not pro-war for the most part. In my Canadian feminist courses, I ran into quite a few articles, particularly one course, articles about how many times women united internationally prior to the Second World War to try to prevent it, and other articles on how women in other wars have united with the enemy women to help each other find their dead men while their sons and husbands were out killing each other. These articles gave me a fresh perspective. As a child, I was exposed to the rhetoric of we fought the Second World War in order to defend our freedom. I think that was rhetoric in retrospect. I grew up thinking there had been no way to avoid the Second World War, and then as an adult I was made aware that some women of that time thought differently, and probably some men as well, but there were a lot of women united trying to stop that war. I moved to the U.S. in the fall of 2000. As I listened to the debates between Gore and Bush, I was struck by Bush's declarations about his willingness to go to war, and by Gore's claims that he would only engage in war if necessary. I was also alarmed by Bush's inability to articulate simple concepts. Not long ago, I asked a Frenchman who had immigrated here, I don't know, maybe 10 or 20 years ago, how on earth George Bush could have been voted in. I was just, you know, I'm still stunned by that, and his thoughts on the matter were that it has to do a lot with the propaganda machine that starts in elementary school. USians, that's a term I have to explain. My son, after we moved here, coined that word because we pretty much refuse, unless we, you know, forget or whatever, to call citizens of the U.S. Americans, because Canadians, Mexicans, and everyone from the rest of the Americas are just as much American. And, you know, for many, many years, I personally have been offended by people here calling themselves Americans to appropriate the term for themselves. So So anyway, Americans, or USians, sorry. There I go. USians in general are viewed by, I would guess, most of the rest of the world, not just terrorists, as an arrogant group of people and as nation-centric, thinking this country is always the best or the first or the whatever. And although, you know, that's true in many cases, there is plenty of evidence that other countries are sometimes the first or the best at something, but people in this country are often not aware. Just one example. For three years in a row, Canada was voted the best country in the world to live in by the United Nations. And I don't think very much of the population here would even know that anywhere but this country has been voted that. And I don't know the statistics. Wasn't Sweden voted once since?
As a first generation Swede, yes. I will say that whether I know it or not. No, I think that's true.
Anyway, I don't know how long it's been since the U.S. was voted, or if ever, by the United Nations. But then it's just things like that people get caught up in. And I think it starts in elementary school. We're the best, we're the best, we're the best. I've even been told by some adults in this country that this is the only, what's the word I want? The only democratic country in the world. Uh-huh. Okay. Or we have more freedoms here than anyone else in the whole world. I would debate that with them. And who knows who would come up with the most, but we certainly have a lot of freedoms in Canada, and a lot of other countries do too. Anyway, point is that it's kind of scary living here with so much of the world having such a negative view of people's attitudes here. And in my view, George Bush has not improved this country's reputation in the world. And I think he's actually increased the risk of being attacked by terrorists here in the U.S. When I heard him making war declarations after 9/11, I can't even read my writing here. My response basically was like, no, 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 can't somebody stop him? I was just, for months, I was just like, cannot anyone stop this guy? So it's terrifying for me to live in this place where we're hated by a lot of the world. So that's what I brought to this movie. You can pretty well know that I liked the movie. I thought it was very well done, because it is well done. You can argue with his facts and say that he wasn't accurate. There's so much debate about that, and what I've read makes me think Michael Moore thinks he did good fact-checking, and that he didn't misrepresent any of the facts, and that people's negative reaction to his film is really about his opinion and his interpretation of the facts. So that's what I think Michael Moore is saying about it. Just want to mention, two things I didn't like about the movie. Was the derogatory portrayal of the coalition of the willing countries. I thought that was, it was meant to be funny, but it was also humiliating and not necessary, I didn't think. And I don't think he told the story of the victims in the civilian victims in the countries that have been bombed by the U.S. I don't think he portrayed the vastness of it, that there are something like 8,000 civilian victims, or I don't know how the totals, but it's up in around that number from what I've heard. I think he gave us a glimpse of it. The Canadian portrayal of the wars is different than what we get here in, from TV. And they get that on a regular basis, sort of both sides. And so I think people here needed to see a little bit more of the damage that's caused. Just to quote a little bit from an article by Mary Schumacher, she says that it is not at all the movie that the right has been criticizing, but it is obvious why it is not a movie that the right wants very many people to see. She called it one of the most powerful and disturbing pieces of anti-war art ever made. And that's my perspective. The one moment in the movie that hits me always the hardest and that brings the tears is the portrayal of the Iraqi woman who is cursing the Americans and Allah for the collateral destruction visited on her family. It just devastates me to think of the civilian casualties that are coming, that are added up in much greater totals than 9/11 casualties, and not to say either is acceptable. It's just that to go out there to say 3,000 Americans destroyed, we're going to go out there, and then they destroy 8,000 or more Iraqis, civilians. That thinking just doesn't work for me. The comment made by Quentin Tarantino that he said that he called Fahrenheit 9/11 the first movie ever made to justify an acceptance speech, referring back to Michael Moore's comments when he won his award. For me, this movie is the movie that justified my perspective on war and on Bush. So that's my view of the movie. I have some material here if anybody wants to get into the some of the hype about the movie, the critiques and such. I can maybe pull up something. but that's all I have to say now.
I belong to a luncheon group of retired guys called the CRAP Club. And CRAP stands for Ken, Ron, and Phil. I am Ron. And before Bush ever went into Iraq or took us into Iraq, the three of us were really worried about the possibility, couldn't imagine what he was thinking. So that tells you immediately where I'm coming from. As it happens, all three of us happen to be returned LDS missionaries. One of them is a returned mission president, happens to be with his wife serving a humanitarian mission in Moscow, Russia, right now, where he supervises 23 other humanitarian mission couples in creating projects to help those who have particular needs. The other is a former school superintendent from Chicago, and I am a teacher of theater. So we come from a mixed background, but we have all been very concerned about going into Iraq. So when I went to see Fahrenheit 9/11, I went to see it because I wanted to see it. I was frankly saddened by a great many of my friends who said they refused to see it. That kind of artistic prejudice, which also creeps into the movie rating system and kind of makes Jack Valenti an ex officio member of the Quorum of the Twelve, it kind of disturbs me. I like to make my own choices and read my own reviews and see the movies that I want to see. But I went to see Fahrenheit 9/11. Mainly because I had seen Bowling for Columbine. Okay? Now, Having said all that, I have to tell you that even though I think that Charlton Heston's take on gun laws in this country is appalling, I also felt that Michael Moore's treatment of Charlton Heston in the movie was appalling, as I did his treatment of those members of Congress that he was accosting in Fahrenheit 9/11, and suggesting that they send their children. I can understand what motivates him, but I'm not certain that that kind of mean-spirited approach is going to be in the long run most helpful. I on my way here this morning, I was listening to Diane Rehm on NPR, and she was interviewing the author, and I can't remember the author's name. Some of you undoubtedly know it, of a book called Bush World.
Maureen Dowd.
Maureen Dowd, Enter at Your Own Risk is the subtitle. And I found myself really resonating to everything that the author said and everything that Diane Rehm said. And so that also tells you where I'm coming from. Not too long ago, I directed a play called The Car for the Lab Theater at the University of Utah, and there is a prop car that actors can lift and turn over as if it's being in an accident on the stage. That prop car lives in the garage of the playwright, who lives in Columbia, Missouri. I went after that prop car, brought it to Utah, and recently I returned it back there. And I found myself surprised to find myself in a conversation with the playwright's husband, who is a dear friend, as is she. He said, "Have you seen Fahrenheit 9/11? And I said, "Yes, I have." He said, "What do you think of it?" And I said, I liked it, and there were parts of it that I didn't like. And he went into a tirade about the fact that if he had not been taken to the movie and his ticket had not been purchased for him, he would not have gone. So, and that surprised me because his wife, the playwright, is an ex-colleague of mine and seems more liberal of heart than does her husband, Mike. So I was surprised to hear how he felt about it, but he had seen the movie, and essentially he said that even though the message may have some validity, the way the message was portrayed was very much not to his liking, and I had to agree with that. Although had the message been different, it probably wouldn't have sold nearly so many tickets. The moment in the movie, there are two images in the movie, and it's been about 3 weeks since I've seen it, so. And not having prepared myself much for today, I can tell you that the images of Michael Moore accosting the congressman made me uncomfortable. The image that was most moving to me was following the mother of the young man who was ultimately killed in the war and seeing her come face to face with how necessary or unnecessary the death of her son might have been, and going from a total Bush patriot to someone who was represented at least quite differently by the movie's end. I was very touched by that. I think it's an important movie, but I think it's also important that we don't approach it uncritically. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, because most of you have seen it or you probably wouldn't be here. But at any rate, that's all I have to say for the moment. Yeah.
I am a criminal defense attorney, so by nature I am anti-authoritarian. I'm suspicious of police. I'm turned off by authoritarian types. I believe in people having their own minds and being able to express them. I came from Colorado, but I've been here in Utah most of my life. I was a Mormon for 3 or 4 years, but then I defected. And actually, the baptism the baptism and the confirmation and the gospel, all of that, I simply didn't believe it. And at some point, I rejected it and declared myself an infidel once again. Politically, I never gave a damn about this country most of my life, even though it almost cost me my life. I would vote, I voted for Kennedy 2 years after he was killed. I figured he was still the best man for the job. And then I voted for Jimmy Carter because I thought he was a genuine man, and he could have been one of our greatest presidents if he would have been given a chance. And Ronald Reagan proved to me that we don't even need a president. The place can run itself. And I voted for Clinton because my wife told me to. And then I voted for Ralph Nader the last time because I couldn't see much of a choice. And then 9/11 happened, and we've all been set on our ears. I think what we're talking about now is, what direction is this country going, and what kind of an America do you want? Like I said, I didn't care. All of a sudden, now, it had a little bit to do with my book as well, I care. And I don't like what's going on. I don't like the idea of this country preemptively striking anybody. The test is supposed to be a clear and present danger. That should still be the test. The thing that my book points out about the Vietnam thing, lie, is that if you are a warrior, if you're a soldier, and you're fighting for your country because the direction and quality of your lives is going to depend on the outcome, you're going to be a much different kind of soldier than if you're a mercenary, which is what we were in Vietnam. And it showed. Those guys were in it for the long run, and we weren't. And they won because of that. These guys in Iraq are in it for the long run, and we're not. And the same thing is probably going to happen. I'm very disturbed about a country like ours invading anybody for any reason. In my opinion, Iraq was a country that was structurally, it was destroyed. Years and years of sanctions had ruined that country like they were supposed to. The infrastructure, all of that. Saddam was an aging dictator in the autumn of his dictatorship, and I don't think it would have repeated. And if nothing else, just send somebody in there to kill the son of a bitch instead of starting a war. But, and I'm only slightly kidding about that. About sending your children to war, there is, I think, one person in our Congress and Senate that has a child in the military. And these guys make the decisions to send your children to war to fight for ideologies that they favor. They send the ideologically unformed to fight for these ideologies. This movie, I mean, Michael Moore, I favored him when I saw the Columbine thing. I thought, because I am so anti-weapons, anti-war, pro-peace, I don't think you can slam guns hard enough. My wife is from England, and my eyes were opened up when I finally traveled to Europe and realized what people think of this country and why. and how the rest of the world is really afraid of us. We're the only people that have ever used the atomic bomb. We didn't use it once, we used it twice. And now there is nobody to say, you can't do this, another superpower to say, you can't do this, or we're going to do this, and you're not going to like that. And maybe that was necessary during this mad time of the Cold War when there was another superpower to check and balance us. This idea that we're at war, an interminable war, Bush declared war against the noun, terrorism. And so the Patriot Act, all the laws, the access that authorities have to your records and your library records and all kinds of things that they have no business looking into without probable cause, all of that stuff is fair game now. And I don't know that we're any safer. I don't feel any safer because I don't feel very afraid anyway. But I don't feel any safer. I don't see anything really changing. And then what the hell are all these alerts about if everything is under control? The ports need to be protected. The airports, of course, need to be protected. Things like that. But searching old ladies at the airport that are in wheelchairs and little kids that have baseball hats on and things, I mean, come on. Our leaders, I think that it is immoral for a man who has never served in combat to send other people into combat. I'm not saying that John Kerry is the better choice in this case. All I'm saying is that people that have been there have an awareness of what it is, and they'll be a little more thoughtful about doing something like that to your children because they know what it is. In the movie, the things that struck me the most were the what's been mentioned here, the two women. The Iraqi woman crying out, where is God? My sisters, my brothers, my children have been killed, all of this smart bombing. And the other woman who is just gung-ho as can be. She's so proud her son's in the military and then he's killed and then she just falls apart and cannot reconcile it. And that is what war is. Cousins, uncles, brothers, sisters, aunts, children, grandmothers being killed. And they're not in for being in the way. I don't care how smart those bombs are, they still blow up and they kill people that are in the area whether they're supposed to be there or not. Not only do the people that suffer from the war as victims suffer in loss of life, loss of limb, loss of family, loss of country, loss of hope. The people that do the killing come back with memories and nightmares and damage done to their humanity that some of them never recover from. Some lucky ones do. So the damage is extensive and it's on both sides. Again, preemption to me is a swear word. I cannot believe that this country is using that term. My book took on a whole new relevance. It came out last year in April, and about the time we were going to go back to war, which I saw as just a repeat of what we'd done. It was another lie. I still don't understand the rationale, if there is one. It keeps changing. But the thing that strikes me is that most people don't care. They don't care what the rationale was or wasn't. They're still basically in favor of it. They said he's a bad guy, he had to go. If that's the test, we're going to invade a lot of countries because there's a lot of bad guys that have to go. But then who are we to decide that? Because we're the superpower, we decide that? This is not a great country. This is a good country. I don't know of a great country in the world today. This certainly is not a great country. And that's the shame, is that it could be, and that it should be, and that you think that by now we would be a lot closer than we are, instead of just spinning circles, doing the same crap we've always done with the same results, the same lessons learned over and over again, and again getting nowhere. The movie, again, to me is important because I feel that the press in this country just dropped the ball, and we don't even have one. I don't know what happened to the radical reporters that were going to tell the truth that weren't embedded or in bed with the Department of Defense when they covered this war. People should see casualties. People should see destruction. People should see death. They should see blood. They should see guts. They should see that's what the hell this is all about. That's what happens to put in place some other ideology. So I'm one of those Americans that would like, I guess I'm with John Lennon. I'm still imagining a better world where we're human, because this fighting, I tell you, I guarantee you, will dehumanize everything that it touches, and it's just that much harder to build it back up. So that's where I'm coming from.
I'll warn you, I'm going to be a lot more critical of the film, because films are about expectations, and you can, you know, if you have very high expectations and a film doesn't match up, then you're going to be disappointed, and that was the case with me. Having said that, I actually agree with what all the panelists have said. To sort of make it clear, I'm not a right-wing nut. I've always considered myself a political moderate. Things I like from both parties, things that I dislike from both major political parties. But I liked Bowling for Columbine very much, and I liked Moore's other films, Roger and Me in particular, which was a brilliant film, and I think he's at his best when he shows the effects of big government, big corporations on the average American and on the little people. And he does a little bit of that in this film. So I was genuinely going into this after having seen Bowling for Columbine and liking it, not agreeing with every little thing, but liking it very much. I was really surprised at how much I hated Fahrenheit 9/11. The first half of the film about the Bush-Saudi connection, it strikes me as a very hollow conspiracy theory. It's the sort of thing that sounds impressive when you first hear about it, but when you get extra facts, it immediately crumbles. It's kind of like those things you might have heard, the connections between the Lincoln and Kennedy assassinations. Hey, they both had Southern vice presidents named Johnson, you know, they were assassinated 100 years apart. And then you immediately see how different those things were, and you think, oh, I guess that's not that impressive. I think his insinuations, frankly, belong beside JFK assassination conspiracy theories. I've studied some of those. And I think interviews since the film's been released more shows that he's frankly paranoid. And he sounds like a conspiracy theorist. He says the mainstream media won't talk about this, won't tell you this. You need to listen to me. I agree that the media has really dropped the ball and has not done their job. They're more interested in ratings than serving a public service. But I'm skeptical of everything, including Michael Moore. And so when he sounds like when he goes and says you have to listen to him, I'm a little bit troubled. I was particularly surprised at his lack of thoroughness. He speaks very authoritatively, and we're expected to believe him. He shows us pictures of George W. Bush sitting with his brother, shaking hands with Catherine Harris, and he darkly hints that Bush cheated to win Florida, but he doesn't really provide any proof, or at least anything unique or anything we haven't heard before. I don't use this word a lot at all, and I'm hesitant, and I'm suspicious of people who do. But the film struck me as almost racist. Moore seems to approach this saying, the more towel heads we can show the Bushes with, the more Americans won't like them. And he seems to play on this idea, he seems to play on American suspicions of Arab Muslims by doing this. And he does the same thing people have rightly accused George W. Bush of doing. He uses 9/11 as an agenda to get people to do things, and in this case, dislike George W. Bush. And that, for me, was the thing of the film. If there was one or two things, that was what struck me the most, how hollow, how pathetic his portrayal of 9/11 was to me. It was, he seemed to be using the victims, he seemed to be using that day, you know, look at how bad George W. Bush screwed this up, and I think he has, but to use such a terrible day for that agenda was troubling to me. Perhaps the thing I dislike the most about the film, he portrays Americans as stupid, frankly. He goes to a small Virginia town, and this town showed up on the terror watch list. There's New York, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., in this town none of us have heard of. And he goes and he interviews these people, and he just makes them look like idiots. They're just these small town, simple folk. They're not on a coast. And they just look so dumb talking about duct tape and everything else. And through his clever editing, he was able to do that. I'm not at all surprised that this film won the Palme Award at Cannes. I mean, I'm sure, frankly, the French and Europeans were delighted with how stupid Americans looked, and delighted with Britney Spears saying, "I think we should follow our president no matter what. She'd make a great Mormon." It was very surprising. And I don't agree with those things, but to selectively use them to make people look stupid. There were parts of the film that rang true, certainly the interviews with Richard Clark. I liked his book. I very much liked Bob Woodward's book, but those are all things we'd heard before. One thing that surprised me, and I'd actually, so I'll disagree with the first panelist, was that I didn't think the film was well made. Nothing like Bowling for Columbine or Roger and Me. It seemed like, you know, I followed politics a lot. I thought I could make a film like this if I had a talented editor and do some stuff. And I just thought, presidents are so in the public eye, we could make any of them look stupid. How about Bill Clinton? "I did not have sexual relations with that woman." We could make the image grainy so it looks artistic, you know, like Moore does, and that sort of thing. And then we cut to images of the USS Cole, the African embassy bombings, the World Trade Center, both the first and the second, and say he was too busy cheating on his wife to do anything about terrorism. Now, I don't believe that. I voted for Bill Clinton, and I really like him as a president. I really liked him quite a bit, actually. But it just seems like you can use editing. We could show images of Monica Lewinsky, Kathleen Willey, Jennifer Flowers, played to Stephen Stills' "Love the One You're With," and we'd kind of get the humor that Moore has in his films, you know. And so it just, I wasn't impressed by those things at all. One thing, this gets into more the political climate in America right now, which disturbs me the most. And I suppose if it wasn't for that, if people were more sane, if people were not at each other's throats all the time, I suspect I probably would have liked the film a lot more, or at least it would have been a lot more fair to it. But what disturbs me about this, if I'm going to be completely honest, is the one thing, and I feel like I lean to the left and I'm a little bit more liberal, and the one thing I've always liked about liberals is they didn't used to engage in groupthink the way some conservatives do. People always said, "Why isn't there liberal talk radio? There's conservative talk radio." Well, I used to like to think that it was because liberals were diverse enough and thoughtful enough that one person couldn't speak for all of them. And that seems to have changed with Michael Moore and Al Franken. You ever drive down the road and you'll see somebody alone nodding in their car, you know they're listening to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, you know, and just going along so proud, so pleased to feel validated. And I'm just horrified at the thought of liberals sitting in movie theaters, nodding along, just wanting to feel validated instead of having a discussion. Because that's what I think is the most important thing. And I do think the movie was important to have a discussion. However, I have to say, those people who say, "Well, you should see it even if you don't agree with it because it's really important to have a discussion," I suspect they're not saying the same things about Ann Coulter's books or Rush Limbaugh's show or anything like that. Well, they talk about important things, so we should be in on that too. The thing that struck me the most about the film, other than that part about 9/11, was Moore's almost bizarre portrayal of the White House. And I suppose he was trying to get people to think of George W. Bush, and I can appreciate that. He zooms in on it 3 or 4 times with eerie music, that poor woman's sobs in the background, or his concerned voiceover. And I'm confident that he didn't intend this, but it really seems like this guy, you know, the White House is such a symbol for America and for the presidency. It's not for the president, at least to me, it's not for necessarily the one person in office. And it seemed like such a negative portrayal of America. And I'm not, you know, an armchair, you know, just gung-ho guy. I absolutely agree. America is not a great country. It is a good country. And so I'm not someone who's immediately offended when I hear, "What? How can America not be the greatest country in the world?" It probably isn't. If I was a little bit more informed about world events, which we don't do very well in this country, I probably would feel that way. But so that was something from the film. And I'll just... I didn't think was great. But what I love is his sentiment about the political place in America right now. He says, quote, "Both movies were appealing to what might be called their cultural bases. They weren't designed to persuade. They were designed to rally the faithful, to use the power of imagery to evoke gut sentiment, to rouse the already committed to various forms of hatred or adoration. Gibson and Moore, two sides of the same coin? Absolutely. There are times when the far right and the far left are so close in methodology as to be indistinguishable. And both movies are not just terrible as movies, crude, boring, and gratuitous. They are also deeply corrosive of the possibility of real debate and reason in our culture. They replace argument with feeling and reason persuasion with the rawest of group loyalties. It is a sign of how far the culture war has gone that almost no one condemns both movies. If you're a fundamentalist red stater, Gibson is a hero. If you're a leftist blue stater, Moore is, in the words of the New York Times, a credit to the Republic. The truth is that both movies are different but equally potent forms of cultural toxin, poisonous to debate, to reason, and to civility. And the antidote is in shorter and shorter supply. Thanks.
I just realized I'm supposed to be giving a paper in 15 minutes, but what I'm going to do is open this to the audience now, and if I leave a few minutes early, Leanna Ray Scott will shift into the role of moderator and take your questions. Come up, please. Yes. Then there's that. Exactly. We've got very little time, unfortunately. Go to it.
I'm a sociologist down at Northern Arizona University, and I'm glad you made a comparison between the Passion of Christ and Fahrenheit 9/11. And I've run the films by my students, and I consider both films, from my sociological perspective, as a Rorschach test, because the diversity of opinions, and by the way, I like both movies. I'm one of these individuals that can understand the Passion of Christ and where people are coming from, and they need a voice, and it mobilized that voice and their feelings. And I honestly believe that Fahrenheit 9/11 is a film to mobilize a voice and to vent that voice in the body politic. So I compare. I like both films for doing that and waking the country up to hopefully then a discourse, a more fundamental discourse. Thank you.
Thank you. Since we've just got about 5 minutes left, please keep your comments short.
I went to Fahrenheit 9/11. I now call it un-Fahrenheit 9/11, along with both the Massachusetts and Manchurian candidates. The premise you have to operate from is balance and truth. This is not a documentary. This is a mockumentary. I graduated from Annapolis, had 4 tours of Nam, lost my toes to Agent Orange. I'm the vice president of the Vietnam Veterans of America for Utah. There are two things out of this movie that I feel are vital, and I think all of us would agree on it. Number one, always keep a politician's foot to the fire. Number two, always question. Do not just automatically give away. But that is the last where I stop, because we have someone who has never served in the military going up and asking congressmen. I have great respect for Muhammad Ali, Chris Christopherson, who was a Rhodes Scholar with Bill Clinton, and he was also taught English, if you can believe it, at West Point. But he had 2 tours of Nam as a slick pilot, taking people out. So though I totally disagree with him, I must respect his service. Manny is a Vietnam veteran. We don't agree on everything, but I respect his integrity and the way that afterwards he has done things to try and right situations. That's what we all need to do. I personally register 5,000 people every election because that's what they died for, not for Ho Chi Minh or anything else, for our Constitution. I feel when it comes to more, more is less. Less integrity, less honor. You still need to see it, but find the truth. The election is governed by law, not by opinion. Go out and find the truth. My best suggestion is that you burn $2 symbolically. And I learned as a parent, never encourage an immature child. And I feel that's what you're doing with more. More is less.
As a member of the Utah National Guard, and my brother just got back from Iraq a month ago or 2 months ago, and then my neighbor, he's been in Afghanistan, and now he's going to go to Iraq also. So I've known a lot of people who've been over there, and people who are still there right now. And I gotta say, I don't want Michael Moore's support. If you're against the war and claim that you support the troops, that's bullshit. And anyway, that's my thoughts on it.
Did I understand you to say that you feel you can't be against the war and still support the troops?
Yeah, no, we don't want that.
We. So the mother in the film whose son was killed in Vietnam should not have the chance to change her mind and say, according to my son's letter, I feel he did not, he came to feel that he did not, that the war that he saw did not support what he felt he was recruited to do. That's not possible. Thanks for well, thank you for making a statement that isn't all inclusive, because there are people who do feel that way who are in uniform. Well, of course.
I support the troops, but I don't support what they're doing.
My name is Jim. My uncle came back 14 days later from Vietnam, and I was just a kid. I honor the troops for what they're doing, not the government. They're doing what they've been signed up to do, and I certainly honor their hearts and their guts and their integrity. There's two other movies. I'm a film major, and there's a lot of films that I've critiqued. One of them, if I had the ability, a mandatory prescription for everybody, would be the Fog of War, Robert McNamara last year, and that won at the the Sundance. Another film that was in the 80s was called Brazil. Please see that movie. If I never talk to you again, see this movie, because you'll be knocked off the couch. The movie for me, what it did was it knocked me out of the trance. Whether it was right or wrong, it was a bombastic film, and what hit me again is to come out of this unconsciousness, this trance. It doesn't feel good. I used to quibble with a guy from Persia. He'd call it Persia. Guy was a physicist. We used to argue in a decent way. We left rancor outside the door, but we talked about the great nations, the incredible countries and nations throughout history, that one day they came to a demise and they're no longer. It's happening to my country. It's happening right now. I don't like the taste of it, but I'm grateful that we have movies like this, again, right or wrong, that knock us out of this trance. There's an acronym for fear. It's false evidence appearing real. And it also occurs to me that we all need a cerebral douching, and it's happening. So thank you. I believe we've extended. Well, we have one more.
Oh, I won't take very long. I want to just focus on another point or make one point here. Because most of us are LDS and the church has said don't see R-rated movies, I don't think that there's a lot of the faithful are seeing this movie. I asked in our Sunday school class, our gospel doctrine class, you know, how many had seen it, because I wanted to make a point about it, and nobody had. At least they didn't raise their hand. And so that's an interesting point, I think, that as Mormon people, if we follow what our leaders say, we're excluding ourselves from some of important movies.
And I suppose those who go to war and see it firsthand, a little more than R-rated, but they see it anyway.
I wanted to say something to the young man who just left. I feel like there's bullshit coming from every side. And so what's new? So I saw Fahrenheit 9/11. I am just so embarrassed that Michael Moore has made it as a person who mocks and humiliates other people with his opinion and uses that for discouraging purposes. I was in Vietnam. I was young at the time when mocking and mockery was a form of humor. And you know, as a result, that generation that I was born into thought that that was humor. I don't think we're seeing the whole picture about war and how war, Vietnam War, still has yet to be summed up. So I don't think, I went to see Fahrenheit 9/11 because I wanted to see, is there any summing up going on here? There is none. We're still at each other. And I feel it's time to go back as Mormons and see everything we can, R-rated or not, and take every bit of information and then let it settle. And out of that, somewhere is going to come wisdom about Vietnam, and those boys did not die in vain. And I saw what war was like.
Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate the diversity of the discussion.